Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That's for Eddie.
Yeah, you need to get here on time.
I need to get here on time. But it was the cock of approval for traffic on the way over here.
What time did you leave your house? What time did you leave your house?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
7:48.
Okay, that's not...
It was totally not traffic's fault. It was totally
that's not traffic's fault.
No, traffic got me here. Like, there was no traffic. It was actually pretty wide open. So I got here and... You know, 4 minutes a little bit late, but thank you for covering for me. But you know, I didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't miss anything.
Except, you know, your introductions. But we'll get to that later.
No, we chatted for a second.
How was your week?
It is
our mystery guest, who shall not be revealed until 5 minutes later.
It's a big secret. Well, you put him in the post.
I know, I put him in
the post. So it's not really a big secret.
Well.
If you're on Facebook.
That's true. But see, you know what? They all have to follow us on Facebook.
They don't.
They don't follow us on Facebook.
No one
does. So, how was your week?
It was all right. What'd you do?
Wait, there's nothing that happened? You didn't see a movie? You didn't get hooked on a new TV show? Nothing? Nothing?
No, my kids started doing naked yoga.
Did you say naked yoga?
Yeah, he does this thing where he comes home from school now and he throws a yoga mat out and then he strips off all his clothes and starts doing yoga.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm doing naked yoga. And I'm like, where'd you learn that? And he's just like, it's just what you do. I'm like, no, you don't just...
Well, you should probably ask him where he really did learn that.
I don't know where he could have learned it. So...
Does he have a male teacher or a female teacher?
No, it's a female teacher, but it's like, he's only 7.
I know where he learned it.
Naked yoga is a little, and it's not really good yoga. If he was doing good yoga,
well, it's kind of weird that a 7-year-old even knows what yoga is.
No, they teach kids yoga now.
Oh, they do? Yeah. Naked yoga, apparently?
No, apparently naked yoga, I guess.
That doesn't sound healthy.
Well, it's probably a little less constrictive. You probably get better.
It's probably somewhat
empowering.
Get
a deeper stretch.
Gives new meaning to some of those positions. Like walk the dog, or I don't even know what they
walk
are.
Walk the dog, yeah. That's a good one.
I couldn't tell you what it is. I went to Big Sur for a camping trip, actually.
Nice.
Have you ever camped in Big Sur?
No.
I've been to Big Sur. I never camped.
Are you a big camper?
I was when I was a kid. I haven't camped as an adult.
I have not camped as an adult either, and it was really fun, but...
No, actually, I camped as an adult. I camped at the Grand Canyon.
I cannot sleep on the floor. Like, that is rough.
Really?
Dude, it's rough. It's rough to sleep on the ground. I got a sleeping bag. I had a tent. I forgot my ground cover.
That's all you need.
Because that's what I had at my parents' house. That's all you need. But really, it's like, as an adult, it's not a night's sleep, like a good night's sleep. But it was cool. It was a lot of friends of Sean's, actually, who recently passed away. And we were celebrating another friend's birthday. And so did a lot of hiking and went into the coldest water I've ever swam in my life. It was so cold that my chest got tight once I got in the water. I thought I was going to die.
Oh.
It was close. Have you ever swam in Northern California beaches?
No.
Well.
You went in the ocean? The ocean that was cold?
Oh, yeah.
The whole Pacific's cold.
Dude, the Pacific is cold. The
Pacific here is cold. You go to Zuma Beach, it's crazy.
It's cold here. But
it's like 50 degrees.
Now go 6 hours north and then jump in the water.
I'm good.
It was crazy. But it was honestly one of the most beautiful beaches I've ever been on. And the weirdest thing is as we were hiking down to the beach... There was a shark. There was a shark body that had, I guess, been swept onto the shore, and it's a whole bunch of rocks, and it just died from being, like, on the shore.
Out of water?
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to be in water.
Yeah. And probably nobody, everybody's like, I ain't touching that.
Was it a big shark?
It was about as big as, I'd say, the width of this whole table.
Oh, well.
So, not like a great white, but pretty big. Eesh. Pretty big. Probably a teenager shark.
Gross.
Yeah, so, you know, I was making a lot of shark fin soup jokes. Like, this would be great. Yeah, and, like, the camping food situation is always, like, you know,
it's not... camping? What do you expect?
Yeah, I know, but it's... You know, I went as a Boy Scout. Did you ever eat, like, dehydrated Boy Scout, like, camping food?
No.
That That was bad.
Why'd you have that?
We didn't have that. I'm just saying. I thought it would like really.
They have coolers now. You can keep stuff cold for hours.
Did bring coolers, and we had a lot of fun, you know. But you can't. Here was the other thing. Here was the other catch. You could not light a fire because of all the fires up there.
Yeah.
So it was like, dude, camping.
That's half
a fire.
That's the best part of camping.
That's the best part of camping. I agree. But, you know, it was nice views and it was a very therapeutic weekend. So a good time was had by all. It looks like our special guest has arrived, Mr. David Leach. How are you?
I'm fine, man. How are you doing?
Wait, our studio audience wants to give you a warm up. No. I love you.
The crowd goes mild.
That's right. Now, Eddie. I've known David a very long time. Probably about 10-plus years, I'd say.
Probably more than that.
10-plus years. Yeah, maybe 15, more. Maybe 12 15, or 13. Yeah, maybe 15. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
Man, I'm getting hairs. Old, man.
Well, I'll just say a lot of gray hairs for some of us. Not,
dude,
you know.
Dude, you look great for your age. I'm like... I'm aging not elegantly, but it's okay. That's why I moved into radio.
Hey, to be alive, you look great for any age.
That's true. That's know? True. David is one of the most talented percussionists in Los Angeles, in the country, that I've ever heard. No, I'm serious. Like, this is our time to, like, really, you know, tell it how it is. So I'm very delighted that he was.
Have you guys ever played together? Like, has he ever played in the NK band?
I've called him so many times to do gigs, and it's like either not worked schedule wise because he's playing with somebody else.
He doesn't want to play with you.
Yeah, maybe you're avoiding me. Maybe
it's
no.
That's
hey, what it sounds like.
The amount of traffic I went through tonight,
that's
I'm not avoiding.
Like. That's true. See that? Yeah, you see, Eddie?
See, I'm not avoiding.
I'm a fan of him. I am I'm a fan of David Leach.
Likewise. Yeah. I'm a fan of Nikhil. So.
See this?
I was just wondering if I'd ever seen him play because I've seen your band. I didn't know
yeah, you
ever
have.
Sat in with
like,
the NK band.
Like, I was just telling my drummer Adam tonight, who, like, we were just talking about you earlier tonight, too, which is so crazy.
That's crazy, right?
I said, Adam, guess who my guest is tonight? He said, who? I said, David Leach. He's like, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, Adam's one of my favorite drummers, and I said, my dream. Like, you know, rhythm section is Jesse Stern on bass. Do you know Jesse?
I know Jesse. He lives around the corner from me.
Are you serious?
Jesse's
the new bassist in NK Band.
Really?
Yeah. So, and Adam's the drummer, or Lyndon Rochelle. Those are the two guys that I use the most. And then, you know, David Leach on percussion and another guy named Chris Lovejoy. That's my dream rhythm section.
Mm.
So, David Leach.
Those are my friends.
Let's do it. I know. See? See, Eddie.
There it is.
This is the opening, the beginning.
You guys
of
should be there right now doing it.
Many doors. Eddie is a comedian,
we
and he
call
doesn't
show.
Give a shit about music.
Well, don't comedians need music somewhere?
I like music.
Yeah,
I enjoy music, but I don't live music the way you guys live music.
Okay. Well, you live comedy the way we live music.
No, I don't even live comedy that way.
You don't think so?
No.
Maybe
comedians don't live comedy that
maybe
way.
You should try naked yoga.
I should.
Naked
I should
yoga. That's the trick.
Naked yoga comedy.
I should get it. You don't want to see it. There's very few comedians I'd want to see naked.
That'd be a short show.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. In more ways than one. But we
so, David, I'm going to warn you. Like, I usually get to know people more in this hour.
Okay.
Then all the time I've known them. Like, I've had Ryan Cross as a guest, who I've known since college.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him more after this hour. So strap yourself in. You don't have to literally strap yourself in. You can just sit there right as you are.
I'm scared.
He's like, shit, is this naked yoga for real?
Uh-oh.
So, David, how did you get into music? What made you drawn to percussion? Tell us, like, how you fell in love with wanting to become a musician.
It just happened. You know, it's one of those things where you say, this is what I'm going to do. You know, it wasn't...
How old were you?
About 50.
50? No, I was like, what?
No. See, my father played drums.
Okay.
So music was just in the house. You know, I grew up in New Jersey, so in the basement, my father and godfather would be there listening to old Miles Davis. Well, it wasn't old at that time, but it was, you know...
Brand new Miles Davis
at that time. You know, and Coltrane and all of those guys. But drums was just a thing. You know, coming up through school, you know, some people go, I'm going to try this instrument, try that instrument, whatever. It was always drums. I didn't go anywhere else until college.
Huh.
So drumming was always...
It was always your language.
Yeah.
Do you think you started because it was your connection to your father?
Part of that.
Because, I mean, it's a language. So you're just like, man, this
is... But it wasn't even conscious. You know, it wasn't a thing where dad played drums, so I'm going to play drums. The cool part was my father played drums, which is how I got a drum set. Because if it was up to my mother,
Hell no.
Yeah, exactly. You're not making all that noise down
right.
in the basement.
I don't need two drummers in my life.
Right, exactly. I married
one. And you were like, actually, you do.
Exactly. So drumming was always my thing. You know, but like I said, I started playing kit. And that was up until...
I didn't even know that. See? Yeah. I didn't even know you played kit.
Well, you know what's crazy? I equate myself to the punter on a football team as far as the kit. If all the quarterbacks go down, the punter is the emergency quarterback. I'm the emergency drummer.
I like it.
If Adam or somebody else...
If they get hit by a car on the way to the gig, you're
right,
the guy.
Right. I'll give you 2 and 4, maybe a fill every now and then, but that's it. I'm not going to do anything. But that's what I love to do.
But you can hold it down.
Oh, I hold it down. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Time is more than just a magazine.
Adam gave you a huge compliment. He was like, David is the most consistent percussionist I've ever heard play. If you want something a little bit behind the beat, if you want something a little bit on top of the beat, or if you want something right on, he will consistently play it just like that forever. And like that sense of time is a very hard thing to learn.
It is, but it's important.
Yeah.
Because to be able to manipulate, you know, let's say, for instance, you're playing with a drummer who likes to play on top of the beat, and you play maybe a little bit behind. So you've got to find that space right in between. You know, and then depending on, again, where the drummer or where the bass player, you want to be able to manipulate time so when the listener finally hears it, they hear a cohesive
thing.
You know, thing.
So, Eddie, most people don't play right on the beat. Some people play a little bit ahead. Some people play a little bit behind. Very few I've found are like right on the beat all the time.
Yes.
And it's just like that little
what determines the beat? Because if you're playing behind the beat, how come that's not the beat then?
Well, we're going to put you a little bit closer.
Okay. If you're playing ahead of the beat, why wouldn't that be?
David,
the beat?
I'll let you answer that first.
It's
like, what's the beat?
The beat is a combination of what everybody is doing.
Right.
You know, think about a train. You have the engine, you have the middle section, and you have the caboose.
Right.
So that whole train is moving, but there's different elements that help it move along. So collectively is the beat.
Okay.
But
does that make sense?
Everyone interprets the beat differently.
Yes.
And maybe that's what it is. You know, like you were saying, it's a language.
It.
So everybody interprets a conversation. You might speak faster, you might speak slower, I might speak right in between.
I wish that I dragged. Mm-hmm. I'm always on top. And you know what's really crazy? I've found I'm precisely always 2 milliseconds on top.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Pro Tools, you kind of like see like where you are at the time.
Exactly.
I am 2 milliseconds. I'm like so anxious to play that. And I've had to work it down to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'll ever be a musician that drags. I've just never been a musician that drags. When I meet musicians that have time, they kind of like lay it down, pull it back. I'm like, oh, thank you. I need you. I need you in my life.
But it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So that the beat is the conversation in total. And then on top of the beat, on it, behind it, is the different elements within that conversation.
Mm.
See?
Hopefully that makes sense.
All this you learned in 5 seconds.
Never going to get any of this.
No, you're going to get
it. Never going to wrap my brain around it.
You know, one day... Colton's going to be like, Dad, I want to be a musician.
And I'll be like, find someone that can teach you because I have no idea.
No, you'll tell him, make sure you play on the beat.
Yeah.
No
and then he'll
idea.
Be like, what's that mean? You'll be like,
no idea.
I just heard it one night.
Make sure you play on the beat. Just make sure you don't drag or play on top. And then he'll be really confused. He'll be like, I'm
confused. I wouldn't even know what to say. I don't even know.
Well, you know who to turn to.
I just listen.
You hear it. You'd feel it. After a while,
feel it.
The conversation's going on, you'll say, wait a minute, that just doesn't feel right. But you know how it feels, but you might not be able to articulate why it feels that way. So that's all we're doing is just articulating.
I guess it's like timing in comedy. I don't know. That's something I can equate it to.
That's perfect. That's a perfect example. Yeah, like sometimes you hit those beats in comedy and sometimes you miss them. And hitting that beat is like the goal all the time.
Yeah.
Every 4 beats.
Yeah.
You get that?
Same thing.
So your dad was a drummer.
Dad was a drummer.
And you said your uncle played as well?
No. Everybody wishes... they probably played, but my father was the only one. But his parents didn't allow him to explore drumming because this was, you know, late 50s.
Right. And they're like,
so,
get a real job.
Yeah,
right,
jazz musician, you know, they
had
such
wanted to do. He wanted to play jazz?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, then even still now, musicians are looked at as, hey, I don't know, you might want to do something else.
Right.
You know, you're not responsible. So he wasn't able to you know, pursue music, which allowed me to. You know, so
you probably
I started,
saw that. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I started playing drums up until, maybe the 10th grade. Long story short, like I said, I grew up in New Jersey. There was a music store. I grew up in Plainfield, New Jersey. And there was a music store slash jewelry shop slash, you know, whatever. And they had some timbales, Latin drums, for lack of better description. Right.
Like that.
So I wanted them, and a drummer in the band who was a friend wanted those as well. So it was a battle of who would get these drums to augment the band. My birthday came, my father bought me the drums. So since
since
the other drummer couldn't have or didn't have the drums, he said, okay, come on, join the band. So that's how
and
I
you're
started.
Like, boom!
Yeah.
I got my ticket in.
That's it. So that's how I started playing hand percussion.
Did your dad know that you wanted the timbales?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Your dad's a good dude.
Yeah, he was. He was. But that was the point. You know, that was where I said, hey, okay, I can use my sensibilities as a drummer.
Right.
But I can do something other than just playing kit in the band. So that began my journey with hand percussion.
Wow. And you know what? Like, I know there's always a different path to go into hand percussion.
Mm-hmm.
And even timbales, that's not usually the first that somebody starts on.
Exactly.
So do you think that because you played drums, it just came to you naturally to play?
Exactly.
And they're louder than drums. They're a lot louder than drums.
Yeah.
Like, you can rock out. Like, Sheila E. plays the timbales. Plays she's, like, well, very famous. Yeah, and she's a badass. But those drums, they're just, like, it's like aggro. You can just go aggro on them. And the coolest thing about the timbales that I love is, like, the phrasing. It teaches you how to phrase within a groove in a very different way. You almost, like, are, like, stuttering. You know, it sounds cool when it sounds like you're stuttering with the beat. You know what I mean, Daddy?
No.
You're like, I'm
no idea. No idea.
Anyway, all right, they're great drums.
What was the first hand percussion instrument you played besides timbales?
Congas.
Wow. That's not an easy one to play either. Dude, you started with the hardest.
Of course, because I didn't know.
Wow.
You know, I just played to what sounded good, what felt good. And it's funny, now that I look back on how I was playing, not like I'm great now, but how I was playing then, terrible.
Why?
Your technique-wise. Technique-wise, I had no technique. You know, it's like me standing up on stage with no material and trying to do stand-up.
I know that feeling.
Hey, I'll give you a little lesson, Eddie. Did you hear how he called, what he called the instruments? They're called congas, right?
What?
Congas, yeah.
But you know, and I know this. A lot of, like, engineers, or they'll be like, do you want to play the congas?
or the congas, or if they call them that, sometimes they'll call them, you know, whatever.
But sometimes they're so confident, and it's like, no.
I just call them drums.
Congas.
Yeah.
They're just drums.
You just put the microphone, let me go ahead and play them, and
that's
you know,
it.
I'll call
that's
them.
It. Those are, like, so when did you get your first set of congas?
Ironically, they were the drummers in that particular band. They were his. So that was probably 2 or 3 years after maybe a year after I started playing.
What kind of music were you playing?
Oh man, we were a big Earth and Fire fan.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we thought, you know, at 16 we were going to be the next Earth and Fire. So it was an R&B. We had horns and guitar. Didn't have keyboards. It was hard to find a keyboard player.
That's crazy.
In 1970 something. So, you know, that was difficult. But it was the congas, like I said, were off in the corner. And here I am with my timbales, and I got a cowbell, and I got some sticks. I'm ready to go. I said, what are those? Congas. Oh, bring them over. Let's see. Not having a clue as to how to play, you know, anything. Like I said, technique was just out the window.
Well,
no, it wasn't even out the window.
It
wasn't even in the house.
Well, and that's like probably one of the first instruments you played with hands.
Yeah.
It's like you're like, okay, screw the sticks. Let me play the groove with my hands.
And then watching other guys. Because, you know, then there was no YouTube. There was no, you know, outlets like that if you just wanted to sit at home. So there was a local guy playing, and I imitated what he was doing. No offense to him, but it just wasn't what it is. You know, and after years of studying, practicing, and playing, you realize, that wasn't even close. You know, it's like tuning the guitar.
Yeah.
You know?
And you just get it right.
Right.
Well, even tuning a conga is like crazy.
Man.
You have to have that ear. That ear has to be, like, it's just like, what is it? It's an animal skin, right? What's the skin?
Yeah, I mean, modern stuff now is synthetic heads, but ideally, it's animal skin. But you bring up a good point, because a lot of people don't think drums in general are a tonal instrument. Totally wrong.
Totally wrong.
Completely wrong. Sometimes I'll play two congas, sometimes I'll play three, and they're tuned to C, G, and E. That's my kind of default tuning. Now, if I'm in a session or doing a session at home, I always ask if somebody sends me the file, what's the key? because you can tune the drums
to
kind of fit. I mean, it's still a rhythmic thing, but you still, my approach is I tune them.
That makes so much sense, because then you're in the key of the song.
Yeah. I mean, you would never say, well, just play the piano, or just play guitar, or just play bass without being in tune. So congas are in tune. So they're very much, drums in general are very much
tuned. This is already too much work for Eddie. He's
sitting here with my mouth open.
He's like, I'm the guy that sits in the back and makes the jokes, and that's why I'm
no
a comic.
No idea what's happening.
Yeah. But I mean, people don't think about it. And now that you're...
Well, it's intricate. It's intricate. And it's like, this is the thing that most people don't know. You know, it's like, people used to think I was crazy for touring with a percussionist. They're like, dude, touring with a percussionist, that's crazy. That's just, like, I don't get it. And I'm like, you don't understand. Like, percussion adds so much more to a band.
Yep.
Always.
If it's done right.
There's
some people, that's unfortunately,
true.
That...
Well, you got drum circles, like those percussionists in Venice Beach. Yeah, it's not the same thing.
But, I mean, for your music, obviously, and any music of quality is...
I think any music. I think, I don't know if there's a style of music that it wouldn't sound cool in. You know what I mean?
No, there isn't. If it's done correctly, and it's not a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way I look at it is the band is a painting. The percussionist comes in, and you might want to be the frame. Or you might want to add a little something here and there, depending on...
Yeah,
you know, the style or what's needed, but yeah, if it's done correctly, it always enhances. It adds depth to the music. It's not just.
And I love when drummers and percussionists, they kind of trade solos or just play together. I can listen to that sound with a good bass player forever. Like that. Yeah. That's all I need. I could just listen to that, and I'd be able to write 1,000 songs over whatever they're playing, because. Just hearing that it just inspires so many ideas. It's such a cool sound because it's like drums talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a conversation.
Very much.
So, and he'll never play what the drummer plays. He'll always play something that complements. So you like I've always noticed this about your playing, and I always notice this about really good percussionists. Before they start playing, they don't just jump in. They listen to what the drummer's doing, listen to the groove, and then they feel something that is going to complement. And it works right away because they take that little moment to just. Feel what's going on in the groove, and it's exciting.
Oh, it's totally exciting, especially when there's a drummer that's aware that there's a percussionist there, so he or she leaves a little space.
Yeah, you space know. Is everything.
Yo, man, it is.
Debussy says space is the music between the notes.
Yeah,
music is the space between the notes. That's what I meant to say. Sorry,
that's where the feeling is.
Debussy was like, "You're misquoting me." Yeah, I agree.
That's where the feeling.
That's
is.
That's where the room is. Just to. You know, to feel music. You
the
know?
Anticipation of what's coming next.
All right, so you're 16. You're playing in an Earth, and Wind, and Fire band. Yeah. When did you know, I got to do this forever? This is my life.
I always knew, but it wasn't something where I could say, you know, I'm going to do this. But the aha moment, I went to Rutgers University. I said, I'm going to be like my father. I'm going to study business. You know, I'm going to still play music, but obviously my father was a big influence. But I'm going to play music on the side, but I'm going to be like my father. I was in business classes, particular class, an economics class. Hated economics.
That's a terrible class to start in.
And it showed, because that class, I got an F in it. I said, you know what? My heart's not in this. My heart's in the music department.
Right.
So, sophomore year of college, I said, you know, business is cool. I got to go where my heart is. And went into the music department and began my journey. You know, learning and understanding, and we're still on that journey, but that's where I said, this is what I'm going to do. I have to follow my heart.
You know? Now, when you do, did you have like a conversation with your parents where you're like, hey, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
When they were cool with it?
But, because they saw that that's what I really wanted to do.
Eddie, did you have a conversation with your parents where you're like, I want to be a comic?
No.
you just surprised them one day, like, oh, by the way, I've been... Really?
Comedy's... Well, you don't need... I don't know. Comedy's just like a sort of a personal, like... You go off and do it by yourself. You don't need, like, an instrument.
Well,
you don't
but I mean, you still, like... You know, you want to tell them this is... I'm not going to go into business school or something, right?
No, I was never going to go into business
school. What did you major in school?
Communications.
No. You were just one of those blank... I'm just kidding.
TV and film communications. I was always studying television and film, so... Okay, it was always the direction I wanted to go in. I just didn't know.
Because for me, it was like a big deal. Even when I was studying music, I had to come home and tell my parents, I don't want to do opera. I want to be in a band. I want to be in a rock and roll band. I want to play funk. I want to play world music.
Yeah.
And they were like, really? Really? And then they saw us play, and they were like, this is what you need to do. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. So you went home, or you called home. How did you do it?
I went home. I went home and said, look. Well, they saw the grade. And I said, look, this is not me. You know, I want it kind of for you, but my heart is truly into music. You know, and as my father and mother said, okay, if that's truly what you want.
Your father's probably like, oh, yeah. Your mom was like, oh, no.
Yeah. She's still that way now. She said, do you still have all those things that make noise? I said, you mean the things that put food on the table and roof over everybody? Said, yeah, that's dumb. I got a whole garage full of those now, excuse me. So
that's crazy. Okay, so then you were at Rutgers. You went to the music school. What did you study? Did you study jazz studies? Did you do... Was there a major in music?
It was performance.
Okay,
awesome. It was performance. So, and that's where I was talking earlier about not having other instruments. That's when I had to play piano.
Wow.
I had to...
Did you do timpani?
Had to play, yeah.
Timpani is an awesome instrument. Yeah. And you know what a timpani is, right?
No.
Timpani is the big drums.
Oh, that.
Yeah, those are called timpanis.
Oh.
Kettle.
Yeah, those drums are awesome.
Yeah, so I mean all orchestral stuff. I played, I think, clarinet. Had to do a woodwind.
I know that one.
See? Had brass, trumpet, trombone, that type of thing. And like I said, piano. And for blanks and giggles, I took voice lessons.
I didn't know this.
No, well, if you were to hear me sing, they didn't know it either. You know?
That's all right.
But it was one of those things where I said, let me try. My mother even took off of work because I did a recital. She said, I can't believe you're going to sing in front of people for real. And I did. And I said, I'm never doing this thing again. You know, between me and the audience is a microphone and a microphone stand.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking.
You can have that.
It's nerve-wracking.
But I had to do it. And I appreciate, you know, singing even more so now because I tried it. And it ain't easy. Just like a good comic.
Yeah.
It ain't easy.
It's not. It's, you are the instrument. That's the thing.
Yeah. So no. I mean, all of those things help shape my sensibilities, you know, musically. And then outside of school, you know, there's a whole world of music and musicians and different things. And living on the East Coast, I had New York right there. So I was able to go and, you know, explore Latin music. And that's it. Oh.
So let's talk about that. So you graduated from school. Did you stay up on the East Coast for a while?
No, actually, I came out to L.A.
Right away?
Right away. I graduated in 84. No, I'm sorry. In January... Yeah, 84. And then January of 85, or that spring, was the actual commencement.
That's a great time in New York and L.A.
It is, but...
Like, that's almost hard to choose. Those are great eras.
But the thing was, I grew up in New Jersey.
So you wanted something different.
You know, I could have stayed with my parents and lived comfortably, and as a friend of mine said, worked in the factory, got married 2-3 times, and just, you know, been there. But I said, I want to go somewhere where nobody knows me, I don't know anybody, and literally I knew one person when I came out here. So it was a challenge to myself to say, okay, go out and see what happens. You know, and I'm still trying to figure out. Now I know 2 people, so, you know, you two, so it makes it a lot easier. That's 3, actually.
So what was the L.A. scene like in 84? You came here, and, you, I mean, I'm sure it was, wait a minute, oh my God. Okay,
January
so
of 85, I had no clue.
There was a lot of hair metal back then. You came in the middle
of like,
hair
bands. That was Whitesnake, Motley Crue.
Totally.
I lived in Hollywood on Sycamore and Hollywood Boulevard, so close to Sunset. But I had no clue. You know, I mean, I didn't know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know. I had come out with another band in 83, and we, you know, just kind of hung out in Hollywood for a few days, and it just seemed cool. But I had no idea what the scene was. Like I said, I knew one person.
Right.
You know, where now you come out and you have a wide range of people that you know, and, you know, they hook you up with gigs and different things like that. One person, I might have had $400 in my pocket, maybe. A couple of congas and a tambourine.
Mm. Wow.
And that was it. And literally, you know, sleeping on somebody's couch.
Yeah, but the music scene is mostly hair metal.
But I didn't
know.
So
you were like, oh, what band can I get a percussion
right,
gig?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Because awesome. hair metal... And spandex.
And breakdancing was big in 85, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Breakdancing was huge.
But that was more of an East Coast
thing. Yeah, that was a kind of an East Coast thing.
Yeah, that wasn't necessarily out here.
Let's play something real quick, because I want to play something that you want to, you know, that you played on.
All right. Since Earth, Wind, and Fire was one of my, and still is one of my biggest influences, I've had the great fortune. I played with Al McKay.
Wow.
Who used to play in Earth, Wind, and Fire, so we do a lot of that music. But I also had the great fortune of recording with Earth, Wind & Fire.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't do radio enough, so I guess
maybe. See? That's why you're here. All right, what were you playing? So, you got the track, Eddie?
Yeah.
So, I guess we can listen to Guiding Lights.
Guiding Lights. Okay.
Let's do it. Here we go.
Your hands in, you'll understand.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Eddie, you can stop, like, grinding on my leg. That song puts you in the mood. That was silky smooth. Eddie, you were getting your, like, your you know,
it was very relaxing.
Your motion. Yeah, exactly. Your motion.
Very relaxing.
No, it's groovy. So, this is crazy. You were 16 years old, playing in a band, wanting to be Earth, Wind, and Fire, and then you get your dream of playing with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I mean, you can't plan it.
No.
You can't.
You cannot.
You can't sit there and manufacture it. Now, I'll tell you what's even crazier. The engineer on this record who called me in is from New Jersey.
What?
I grew up in Plainfield. He grew up in Roselle. That's kind of like L.A. and Sherman Oaks. But maybe not even that far, but it's that close.
It's close.
So here we are in L.A. recording with one of my favorite bands of all time, a couple of guys from New Jersey. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, and we fortunately, Neil Polk, I had to make sure I give him some love, but we've done a few other things. But it's just crazy, you know, like I was saying while the song was playing, how you don't know your path, you don't know where you've gone until you kind of stop and look back.
Yeah.
Couple of brothers from New Jersey making music for
that's crazy.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. And you said something cool. You were like, you know, when the song was playing, we were talking on the off the air. You said, I was at Madison Square Garden 1974, and I just pointed to the stage. I was like, that's it. And dude, many musicians never get that opportunity to play with their heroes or to share the stage or whatever. And it's like, man, you're doing it.
It like I said, I couldn't plan it. You know, I'm 17, 18 years old. Watching these grown men who probably weren't really that much older than us.
Right.
But watching and said, that's what I want to do. That's, you know, in this, we're in Madison Square Garden, it's the lights and, you know, just the whole thing. I'm still fascinated by equipment.
Right.
You know, when you go to a, good go to gear, a concert, just, you know, you see the red lights, you see all the stuff going.
It's beautiful.
It's like Christmas.
Yeah.
And I've done, fortunately, you know, many shows where I'm there. But I still, in the audience, will look and say, that's kind of cool. So to see that then, and then to be a part of any music that's going on.
You must have been so giddy the night before that session. Because I know that feeling where you're just like, oh man, tomorrow I get to play with Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I just had to say, all right, 12 notes, just go play them.
Right, right.
But it's kind of like a duck. On the outside, a duck looks calm, but on the inside, you know. So that's what I was on the outside. Yeah, yeah, I'm going.
It's cool.
Got a session.
No big deal.
Earth,
I got a session
tomorrow.
With some band. Yeah, that's it's cool.
But on the inside, I'm saying, okay, metronome, don't fail me now. You know,
I want to play another track because you just got me. You got that groove in my head right now.
Oh,
just like, what do you want to play next?
Well, it's with the Earth, Wind, and Fire theme.
Okay,
it's called The Rush. And I am also proud because I get to share a percussion track with one of my great friends and a great percussionist, Munyongo Jackson. So not only am I playing with Earth, Wind, and Fire, but I'm playing with another percussionist who I hold in such high regard. We didn't play together, but
it don't matter.
You know,
it don't matter.
Let me rephrase that. We didn't play at the same time,
right?
But we played together.
Yeah.
So this
Very
is
nice.
The Rush.
Here it
the
is.
Rush.
Knocking on my door right now is you. Oh, high all the time. Just like we breathe the sapphire, we'll be fine till the chime strikes and it's the wind.
Ask you a question, because I this is something I always ask a lot of percussionists. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite instrument to play? You got the triangle. I know there's I know a lot of drunk people come and ask you for cowbell because they just are going to do that. Like Eddie would probably ask you for cowbell.
Well, that's what we know.
That's what we know. Yeah. That's what we know. I need more cowbell, right?
That and the shaky thing.
The shaky thing. The tambourine.
No, the sounds shaker? Like a rattlesnake.
It's a shaker or
shaker.
Yeah. Shaker.
Shaky thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because sometimes you do sessions and that's what they ask. Well, give me the shaky thing.
And you're like, which one is that?
You know, then you got to listen to the track. Oh, okay, I think I know what you want.
Let me ask you this too. Okay, before you answer that question, okay. How many tambourines you got?
Oh, man. How many tambourines do I have? About 15.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. But always one tambourines. More, you know, because they sound
No,
different.
I know, and they all sound different. Yeah. But it's like, I thought you were going to say three.
Oh, no,
I thought you were
no.
going to say three or four. Like that would have been impressive enough. 15's like you're off the charts, well, dude. That's
Tracy
crazy.
Partridge from the Partridge Family probably had three.
Okay.
For those that know
David Leitch.
Yeah.
But he wants. Okay, so what's your favorite instrument to play for hand percussion or as a percussionist?
Favorite instrument?
Yeah. Like there's got to be something when you're laying a groove down that you're like, this is the jam.
Well, the shaky thing.
The shaky thing.
No. But,
everybody likes the shaky thing.
But you know the funny thing is a shaker enhances. If done right, and it goes back to what we're saying, on top of the beat, on the beat, behind it, depending on where it is, just to be able to manipulate the feel of the song
right.
with something as simple as a shaker, that's cool. That's a lot of fun.
You know what? The shaker is actually the hardest instrument to keep time to. Many people do not understand how hard it is to play a shaker in time. It is seriously the hardest instrument to play in time. I can play piano, no problem. I can play bass, no problem. I can play guitar. I can sing in time. I could get a little bit of a groove on drums, but shaker in time for a whole song, that is not easy.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm a superstar. David, where can people find you? Where can people find you if they want to get you for gigs?
They can find me at davidleachmusic.net.
So spell it out because people are dumb.
David, D, it's all one word, David Leach Music, D-A-V-I-D-L-E-A-C-H, music, M-U-S-I-C.net.
David, you've been such a pleasure to have on our show.
Man, thanks for having me.
We definitely, we're going to play you out for our last track. What are we going to play out?
One of my other favorite guitar players, Mr. Greg Perret. You probably know his son, Justin, who plays with Ozo Motley.
Oh, yeah.
So I've played with Greg, I don't know how many years.
And you were just, you're a badass, David. We're going to collaborate. We've just been talking off the air.
Yes.
You and I are going to make some music.
Yes.
Eddie's going to start learning how to play the shaky thing. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. And David, thank you for being with us tonight,
Thank you for having me, man.
Of course. We're going to have you back. We're going to have you back. So don't change your number.
What should I play out?
Let's play, since this was so much fun, let's play It's All Good.
All right. Here we go.
It's All Good. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.